Well, I invite you to open up your Bibles at Daniel chapter 6. Daniel chapter 6. And on the Church Bible, this is page 890. We're going to read this chapter as we proceed through our message this night. It's a chapter about devotion. And we come to this chapter in our Faith Odyssey series, Faith Odyssey in a Foreign Land. And as we say, it's a chapter about devotion. Devotion is one of the strongest motivations known amongst men. It can lead to amazing acts of selflessness, and it shows itself in massive commitment to the person that you are devoted to. Three scenarios to show what devotion leads to. First of all, last year, Rosemary and I went to Paris for our silver wedding anniversary. We were there just for 2 days with some friends. And these friends, they knew their way around Paris very well. And so they said, say five places you want to go to, because you can't do everything. Just mention five places you'd like to go to. So one of the things on my list was this flight of steps that I'd seen in a Doris Day movie. April in Paris, I know. And it was these steps went up and up and up, and there was this sort of, it was then a gas lamp, it was a street lamp, and it was very atmospheric, and I think it's been in other films as well. And I just wanted to walk down these steps with Rosemary. And he took us to, it was Montmartre was the place, he took us there, and we weren't the only ones that wanted to do that, obviously. There were loads of people on this flight of steps going up and down. A long flight with this railing in the middle and steps either side. And in the midst of that, there was this one teenage girl who was severely handicapped. And she was being helped down each step by her mother. And it was an amazing sight to see, because here was painstaking devotion to her daughter. And there were a lot of steps. And this girl obviously wanted to do that thing. And her mother made sure she could. What devotion leads to? Painstaking help. Another city, another place, a hot sunny afternoon in a castle high up over the city of Lisbon. And there, it was a wonderful castle, but there was a big slope. And we looked around us and there was this lady, more towards the older age group, and she was pushing her heavy husband in a wheelchair, a manual wheelchair. She was having to push it, and you could see the sweat coming off her brow. But she was doing that just to share the moment and the views with her husband, so that he too could join in. What devotion leads to? It leads to someone serving others. A third scenario can be repeated in any city, in any place around the world. Grown-up children who care for their elderly parents, who spend hours and hours, leading sometimes to days and even weeks, to look after their parents so that their parents can have a good measure of life. What devotion leads to? Devotion leads to serving. Devotion leads to selfless activity. Devotion leads to massive commitment. Devotion leads to the lion's den. Devotion is a strong thing. Whether it's seen in a child, a spouse, a parent, or any loving person, it's defined in the Oxford Dictionary as enthusiastic attachment, loyalty to a person or a cause, or simply great love. If you should look up Chambers' Dictionary of Synonyms, you'll find 29 other words that can be used for devotion. There's adherence and adoration, not going to give all 29, but adherence and adoration and affection and allegiance and ardor and attachment, and those are just the A's. You go on and you see it speaks of commitment and dedication and loyalty. And devotion makes you do things that you never thought you could possibly do, like walking in the rain and the snow when there's nowhere to go. Devotion makes you walk 500 miles Devotion would enable you to climb the highest mountain. Devotion would make you cross the Kalahari Desert. And devotion leads to the lion's den. Well, that's what it did for Daniel in chapter 6. Chapter 6 demonstrates Daniel's great devotion to God. We've seen Daniel in action in the first 5 chapters, but chapter 6, we really see his devotion coming through strongly. Here's his unshakable commitment, his loving loyalty. You can buy glue that is just glue and sticks things. You can buy glue that's known as super glue, and it really sticks things. And here's Daniel with super devotion. And here he is, adhered to his God in a way that super sticks. And here's Daniel in the lion's den. Now, this is a picture which is found in every child's Bible you'll ever come across. Daniel in the lion's den. Here's a famous saying used by many Christian people and others as well to describe a situation that they are in when they are outnumbered and up against tough opposition. But here's the question tonight. What led Daniel to the lion's den? Why did he end up there? We speak about Daniel in the lion's den, but how did he get there? Well, we see from this chapter that it was Daniel's devotion to God that led him to the lion's den. And who knows where your devotion to God will lead? It may lead you to Africa or Burma or China or Kosovo or Albania or India or Guatemala or any other place ending in A. Or it might lead you to working in Rainbow or Spectrum or Discovery or Impact or any den of children or young people. Daniel's devotion led him to the lion's den. Note his devotion in 2 ways. The first way his devotion is seen is in the workplace, in the workplace. We know that Daniel was a chief official in the government. We'd seen in chapter 1 that he'd been trained to be a top leader. We'd seen in chapter 2 that he was counted amongst the king's advisors. And now if you simply look at the end of chapter 5 and verse 29, you'll see that at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple. A gold chain was placed around his neck, and he was proclaimed the 3rd highest ruler in the kingdom. This is amazing. Here is this man, a Jew in exile, who is one of the top leaders of the then Babylon. Today, we would find Daniel in the Times newspaper. We'd find him on the Newsnight TV or in Question Time. And now chapter 6 opens, and it's a new situation for Daniel. There's a change of government. It's no longer Babylon, but Persia. It's no longer Belshazzar, but Darius. And Persia, now in rule, was a massive kingdom. It spread for hundreds of miles in every direction. And that took some governing. And so we read in chapter 6, verse 1. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps, strange name that, satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with 3 administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Well, here's Daniel's high position. He's one of these chief top administrators with these satraps underneath him. So Daniel reported directly to the ruler of Persia. This was some position to be in. And his devotion to God is showed by his character and integrity in the workplace. Top official, but notice how full of integrity he was. Verse 3. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. And his integrity at the end of verse 4 is amazing. The end of verse 4, they could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. What a witness for God in such a high place in public office. He does his work well, exceptionally well. He proves he can be trusted and relied on, and he's not negligent in his responsibilities. Those are 3 exceptional qualities that we need to aim for in our place of work as well. doing our work well. Not just getting it done, but doing it well, following good practice. We need to show ourselves to be trustworthy in the workplace as well, whether we're handling money, information, responsibilities, people, or duties. Are we known as those that can be trusted? And like Daniel, too, we need to be thorough, not negligent, but not that we can't be bothered or just whatever attitude in the workplace. But these three things, working well, being trustworthy, and being thorough, are not just good career moves. They're actually pleasing to God and a real blessing to your work colleagues as well. So here's Daniel in this top place in government, exercising exceptional qualities in leadership, and his boss notices him. So again, note verse 3. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. He was on the move. He was on the up. Darius wanted to promote him to be the top man under him. And the promotion party was all set. Except that the other two administrators didn't like the idea. And nor did some of these strange satraps. They seemed to be against Daniel. For we read in the first part of verse 4, At Darius's plan, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. So these people didn't want Daniel to be promoted. And we can only surmise why. Maybe they were jealous of him and they wanted that position. Or maybe they were just nationalistic Persians and they didn't want a Jew in that place. Or maybe Daniel was being persecuted for righteousness and they couldn't stand his integrity and his godliness. Whatever reason, they didn't want him promoted. And so dirty tricks and political intrigue and maneuvering begins to take place. They try some dirty work to bring Daniel down. In verse 4, we see they try to find something in his conduct of government affairs. But Daniel was exceptional in that, and a man of integrity. They couldn't point a finger at him at all. They couldn't say, he's cheating there, he's doing that wrong, and he shouldn't be doing that. Daniel really was squeaky clean here. So in verse 5, they change their direction. They know they're not going to bring him down for his work, so they look about his devotion to God. Verse 5, finally, these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God. Here, they thought, they could get him. So they set a trap, and it's a murderous trap. They actually were so against Daniel, they didn't just want him not to get promotion. They wanted him murdered. Look at verse 6. So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, oh, King Darius, live forever. They're always saying that. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, live forever, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. They knew how to get this decree in writing. Let's tell Darius that he's like a king. And let's say that nobody can pray in Persia, like Babylon before it, had many gods. Let's say that you cannot pray to any god but you, O king. Let's say, O king, that you are like a god. And that appealed to his pride. So he signs the decree. And the decree is issued that if anyone should pray for the next 30 days, it had to be to this king. The command is dreadful. If you pray and it's not to the king for the next 30 days, you are going to the lion's den, which is like certain death. Today we would count this as a total violation of human rights. But here's the question. Feel the tension. What's Daniel to do? On the one hand, if he prays to Yahweh his God, he will go to the lion's den and die horribly. But if he prays to the king, he'll be safe and he'll get promotion and live in luxury. What's he to do? How devoted to God is Daniel? Well, that brings us to the second area of devotion. Not only is Daniel devoted to God in the workplace, but also in the place of prayer, in the prayer place. Look at verse 10. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room, where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Daniel knows that he could lose his life for doing this. He knows that he could literally be thrown to the lions for doing this. But note what he does. He does what he usually does. And it's like almost a throwaway expression at the end of verse 10. Just as he had done before. But in that expression, it explains so much of who Daniel was. Just as he had done before. Daniel's devotion to God had led him to doing certain practices of spiritual disciplines throughout his life. It led him to building godly routines into his daily life. And his prayer, daily, was quite simple and straightforward. You notice in verse 10 that it tells us his practice of prayer. He had a place of prayer. It was an upstairs room with windows towards Jerusalem. He had a posture for prayer. It was on his knees. And he had a time for prayer three times a day. Psalm 55 verse 17 says, "O God, I cry to you morning, evening and noon." This was probably Daniel's times of prayer. And Daniel had built into his life this godly discipline of regular prayer times. And we will never maintain a prayer life if we do not build spiritual disciplines into our life. I wonder if we know anything about spiritual disciplines and routines. There's many disciplines we've got to have in life. Many of them which we just have to have. Like getting up. But there's other disciplines that we can build into our lives that we choose to do. Jesus said people ought always to pray and not give up. What if Jesus asked me and what if Jesus asked you, right, when's your time of prayer and where's your place of prayer? What would you say? You might say, oh, come on, you know how busy my work is. Yes, but Daniel was a top leader in the government of the day. He was busy. Or you might say, well, I'm the more spontaneous type, you know, I pray when the mood takes me. But prayer is a command. And what if the mood never takes you? No, Daniel had built this godly discipline into his life. As a top official in the government, he had times of prayer. And the value of Daniel's prayer time is that it helped him in his time of crisis. Daniel didn't suddenly start praying when this crisis hit. He was already a man of prayer, and he just did as he always did. There's something cool, calm, and collected about verse 10. Notice again, now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, what did he do? Run around? Panicking? No. He went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. He's doing what he's always done. And even the content of his prayer is mentioned here, which I think is quite amazing at the end of verse 10. He got down on his knees, he prayed, giving thanks to God. He knew he was going to be in the lion's den, but he still gave thanks to God. The Apostle Paul says in Philippians chapter 4, 6 and 7, but on all occasions give prayers and pray and with thanksgiving, with thanksgiving. No matter how bad, and I said sensitively, how tragic our situation is, there is always something we can give thanks for. And Daniel gets down on his knees and thanks his God for something. Well, Daniel prays because he had a routine of praying. Now is the time to start praying. Don't wait for the crisis. Don't wait for that news about your health or about your child or about your loved one or about your finances or about your work. Don't wait for the crisis to start being a woman of prayer. Develop a habit of praying regularly now so that when the crisis hits, you just do what you normally do. Pray. And this is the place where the battle is won or lost, the place of prayer. The real battle in Daniel chapter 6 is not the lion's den. The lion's den is a consequence of the battle. The battle is the place of prayer. We speak about Daniel in the lion's den, rightly so, facing opposition, but we also need to speak about ourselves, if we think about us in the lion's den, about ourselves in the place of prayer. That's the real battle, prayer and devotion. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I throw it out as a thought. It might be easier to do the big public thing of going to the lion's den than it is to do that regular, almost secret thing of praying. I said that, but I don't know whether it's true or not, but you see what I'm trying to say? The big, dramatic, public exhibition things, whoa, everyone's watching. There's a kind of motivation to that, isn't there? Pump me up about this. But when it comes to that getting down on your knees and praying regularly, there is the battle. But that's what devotion leads to. Devotion leads to prayer that leads to the lion's den. Now, surely Daniel could have avoided the lion's den. Consider the alternatives to him praying here in verse 10. He could have played the human rights card, couldn't he? What Darius had decreed was completely outrageous. And Daniel could have got his other Jews in the kingdom together to sign a petition and to go on a march and to set up a camp outside the palace in Persia. But he doesn't, because he knows it's useless, because in verse 8, these decrees cannot be repealed. So he could have played the pragmatic card. Daniel could have said, well, I'm not going to pray for 30 days. After all, it's only 30 days. And after 30 days, I can live and I can pray again. And I can witness some more as well, can't I? So he could have been pragmatic about it. Or he could have played the deceit card. He could have said, I'll pray to the king openly, but to God in my heart. And God will understand, surely. But he couldn't do that, because that would have been hypocrisy, and Daniel was a man of integrity. So he prays as he had always done, and because of his devotion to God in prayer, he ends up in the lion's den. And yet, there's something more to this. Because there's one other thing Daniel could have done to avoid the lion's den. It could have been that he could change his place of prayer and change his times of prayer. There's something deeper than an act of prayer going on in verse 10. Something deeper. What is it? He could have gone to another room. He could have picked another time. He could have outwitted his enemies. He could have got away with it. Nobody could have known. He could have still prayed to God elsewhere. But no, he does what he's always done in the same place at the same time. Why? What's at stake? I suggest to you that two things are at stake, and it's all to do with reputation. Daniel's reputation and God's reputation. Both were on the line at this point. Daniel was known as a man of prayer. They knew, remember in verse 5, that the only way they'll catch him out is if it's something to do with the law of his God. So they knew that Daniel was a man who prayed, and they probably knew, because Daniel would have told them, that his ability and interpretation of dreams had come from God. So they knew that for 30 days, Daniel could not stop praying to his God. And if Daniel had stopped praying to his God, or had avoided being found out, then they would have said, Daniel's not a man of prayer. He's not a man of integrity. He's just like the rest of us. He'll give in when the going gets tough. And his witness would have been totally destroyed. And likewise, God's reputation would have been destroyed. And his fame would have been smashed. Because people judge our God on our behavior. And it's likewise with Daniel. People judged God on Daniel's behavior. So if Daniel had stopped praying or have avoided people knowing that he was praying, then they would have said, well, he's not much of a God, is he? If Daniel only serves him in good times, but he's worried about the consequences, no, this God can't be up to much. He's just an ordinary God of an ordinary man. But Daniel has to pray in the same place at the same time, doing the same thing, so that people would know he's a man of prayer. Because his whole life is about God. His whole life is about devotion. His prayer was an expression of his devotion. His integrity was an outflow of his devotion. His government skill was a result of his devotion. The whole reason for his existence was his devotion to God. You take that away from him for 30 days and you've lost the man. He loved God so much that he didn't want to see God's glory tarnished in any way. So with this utter devotion, he prays and is prepared to go to the lion's den. He would not stop praying. I wonder if we would pray in this situation. It actually doesn't take much to stop us praying. Telephone goes. Oh, I get that. But I'm praying. Oh, there's something more important than my prayer. The telephone has gone. Oh, I feel a bit hungry. Oh, I just feel a little bit tired here. Oh, my television program's on very soon. And we stop praying so easily. We all do it. We stop praying so easily. Daniel prayed, even though he was going to go to the lion's den. We might call out to him, Daniel, don't be crazy. You're going to end up in the lion's den. You'll lose your life for this prayer. And Daniel would have turned around to us and say, don't you be crazy. How can I not pray? My whole life is built around God. I'm devoted to God. I've got to pray. There's a verse in the New Testament in Revelation chapter 12, verse 11 that says, there are people who did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. That was Daniel. There are people who love God more than they love their lives. There are people who are devoted to God more than to themselves. Like the persecuted church today. Why do people remain Christians in China, North Korea, Burma, Saudi Arabia, or anywhere else ending in A, when they know that they're likely to suffer? Why do they do that? Because they're devoted to God. They're devoted to his glory and fame. And that's a challenge to me, and I hope to you as well. Do I love God more than I love my life? Would I still pray if I knew I was going to the lion's den? Would I still preach if I knew I was going to prison? Would I still be devoted to God if my life was suddenly to get hurt and I were to suffer? And Jesus said, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. And in a real sense, if Daniel had saved his life from the lion's den, he would have lost it. Because everything he was about was God. And if he'd lost that, he'd lost his life. So Daniel was devoted to God in the workplace. He was devoted to God in the place of prayer. Third and final place he was devoted to God was in the lion's place. Looks like a smiley lion. Couldn't find one that was not a smiley lion. Daniel in the lion's den. Sure enough, he was found out. Verse 11. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. They report this to the king, verse 12. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, crafty this, anyone who prays to any god or man except to you, O king, live forever, would be thrown into the lion's den? The king answered, the decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, cannot be repealed. Then they said to the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, live forever, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Now, this is another thread running through the story, but we really haven't got time to pick up this thread about how Darius was just so surprised that Daniel had been caught like this. That's another thread. But verse 15, then the men went as a group to the king and said to him, remember, O king, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. What's happening now? Daniel is about to be thrown to the lion's den. Verse 16, so the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you. Because the king liked Daniel. The king had a really good worker in Daniel. He didn't want to lose Daniel, but he'd been caught out. Daniel is thrown, in verse 16, into the lion's den. Verse 17, a stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet ring, with the king's and with the kings of his, and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. This is the result of devotion to God. Stand for God in the workplace, and not everybody will like you. They'll want to do to you what they did to Daniel. They want you to get out of that workplace. Practice the disciplines of the spiritual life and you'll get into trouble. Nobody says devotion to God is easy. If we spend time in prayer, it's going to lead to trouble. It's prayerless Christians who live very boring lives and all they can talk about is money, latest book, film, fashion, property and furnishings. But it's prayerful Christians who are on the cutting edge. It's prayerful Christians who end up in the lion's den. It's prayerful Christians who end up really helping people and dealing with crises in people's lives and have boundless witnessing opportunities. Prayer leads to the lion's den. And here's Daniel in the lion's den. And the stone is rolled over the door and it's sealed. Now, pictures of Daniel in the lion's den show him to be a young, strapping, 20-something. Daniel was 66 years old at this time. If he was 14 in chapter 1, when he was taken as an exile to Babylon, and that was in 605 BC, it's now 539 BC as Persia's come to power. Daniel is 66 years old. Looking forward to retirement. Or maybe looking forward to going back to Jerusalem. How did Daniel feel as he was thrown into the lion's den? What about his physical condition? Did his heart pound? Was his mouth dry? Did his head ache? Did his legs tremble? Did his hands shake? What did he see when he went there to the lion's den? How big was the den? How many lions were there? How big were the lions? And how did he feel when the stone rolled across the door in verse 17 and he heard the seal going round? There was no turning back for Daniel now. What happened next as the stone closed over that tomb? Did Daniel do as he always did and get down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God and asking for help? And then did Daniel wait for the first whack of the lion's claw or the first bite of the lion's teeth? And he waited and he waited and waited all night long. And nothing happened. There was no crush of the claw. There was no bite of the teeth. There was no wound upon him at all. What happened? Let Daniel explain in verse 19. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, O king, live forever. That's just the kind of thing you did to the kings. O king, live forever. May God, my God, send his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound, not even a tiny scratch, was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. And Daniel explains it as an angel closing the mouths of the lions. How strong was this angel? And Daniel was rescued. He came out alive. It's like a resurrection, really, isn't it? He's put in the tomb, left for dead. The stone is sealed. He's just left there. But the stone was in vain, the seal was in vain, because God was at work. And Daniel came out alive. And God will always deliver those who are devoted to him, either in this life or the next. And there was another stone rolled across another tomb, and another seal that proved vain, a Roman seal on a tomb in Jerusalem. And Jesus was put into that tomb. And Jesus was entombed because of his devotion to God. And Jesus prayed, not before an open window in Persia, but in a garden in Gethsemane. And Jesus prayed, expressing his devotion to God. And because of Jesus' devotion to God and his prayer, he ended up in another lion's den, a lion's den called Golgotha, which had a cross. And according to Psalm 22, verse 13, Jesus was surrounded figuratively by lions tearing at their prey. And then Jesus was put in a tomb, and the stone was rolled across the tomb, and a Roman seal went around the tomb. But we know the end of the story. 3 days later, Jesus came out of that tomb. He rose again. Because death could not keep its prey. He tore the bars away. Jesus, our Savior. And this is what happened to Daniel. And this is what happened to Jesus. And this is what happens to all those who are totally devoted to God. For the lion's den is never the end of the story. The arena of suffering, or the cold tomb, the grave, the coffin, is never the end for the followers of Jesus. Look at verse 24. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children, because the king of Persia was very mean. God never commanded that. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God. He endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." And Jesus said, "He who loses his life for me will save it." For God always wins. And Jesus' devoted followers will never lose, ultimately, just as Daniel found out. Devotion to God leads to many things. It leads to prayer. It can lead to trouble. But ultimately, devotion to God leads to resurrection. So let's sing a hymn about the resurrection.